our group is going to be a full package of recommendations or several packages. Well, you'd better come back after the coffee break because that's our topic. So stay tuned. We're breaking for 15 minutes. Reconvene at 2:15 with that exact topic. Thank you very much, Jordan, for, making this so clear. Two-minute warning. Going to get back to the question you've all been asking, trying to maintain some attention. Okay, we have the quorum of co-chairs now.
So what's next?
We are starting again. So, should we submit our recommendations as one package and one package only? Or one subgroup set of recommendations by subgroup on a subgroup by subgroup basis, or is there another way? That's what we need to discuss here. We started this conversation at the previous plenary, and we have assembled a pros and cons document and summarizing what arguments were exchanged in these initial discussions. Basically, arguments in favor of a single public consultations were to avoid the possible conflicts or gaps between the recommendations of the various subgroups. So consistency is obviously a key argument here. And second argument was that some ASOs and ACs may not want to focus their time and attention to 9 successive sets of recommendations, but rather focus on one single package. On the other hand, we had arguments in favor of a more incremental approach, which included the fact that a single document with all our recommendations would necessarily be very long, very diverse, because touching on very different topics. So potentially very hard for individuals or even SOACs to consider as a block, as a package. There was concern that if one recommendation was rejected, it could imply the entire unified report was rejected. But I think our charter allows for SOAC to deliver a recommendation by recommendation approval or rejection. But that's something to investigate. The fact that obviously if we wait until the last group is finished to submit our recommendations, then some will have finished earlier and might have to unnecessarily be waiting for approval and implementation. So it's creating delay for recommendations that would be useful for ICANN as a whole. There were concerns about group motivation. Obviously, if a group is closed and waiting for all the others. Volunteers will go to other areas and not be able to, you know, do the final stretch on selling the recommendations in the end. And I think that was the most pros and cons approval, and there was a suggestion to adopt a sort of a compromise approach where there would be potentially one big package or two big packages, or some subgroups might be submitted individually, with the ones having closest connections to each other's being presented as a package. That's where we were in the discussion, and we'd like to advance this because it's obviously going to affect the timeline extension discussion and the work plan, and also because we are going to send correspondence to the ASOs and ACs about timeline extension. So this is a perfect opportunity to introduce to them how we are planning to do this chartering approval process and make sure we're in line and set expectations with them about this. Going to write to them, asking for extension of the timeline, it's the good opportunity to demonstrate we're thinking about closure, about how we're going to proceed to closure, and test that that they're comfortable with the approach we're taking. So with this introduction, I'd like to hear whether there are any either new arguments or perceptions that there's about the way forward on this issue in the group, and I'm happy to see this queue forming already. Greg, you have the floor.
Thank you, Greg Shatton, for the record. I think that holding everything completely open until the last group finished would be a mistake. I think there does need to be closure on each of the individual subgroups. I think that once some of the subgroups close, that will actually allow people who are participating in multiple subgroups to concentrate further on others and help those to finish as well. The question of whether we hold everything in a queue and submit it to the SOACs as a single package for final approval, I think is less important than the idea that we should bring each thing to closure and stamp it done. I think, however, we should submit things in bundles, because I think rather than a single bundle, looking for critical dependencies, not relying entirely on chance, but where there aren't critical dependencies between those that are complete and those that are incomplete, they should be submitted all the way through. And then I think at the time of the final bundle going through, there should also be a harmonization effort, and any harmonization issues should be brought back to the SOACs so that any changes to the already approved reports could be made again. Or for those where we don't think that will happen, those could be put all the way through for board approval. Then there really wouldn't be a harmonization effort needed. So we'll have to, you know, look at each of the nine carefully. But if there's one that's, you know, largely independent, let's say the good faith group, that could be put all the way through to board approval without having to wait for, say, the jurisdiction group to finish its work. I don't think one has any bearing on the other, and there's no need to hold that up even for harmonization purposes. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. The next in the queue is Niels.
Thank you very much, Mathieu. And I'm very happy to say that I concur largely with my colleague Greg. Consistency is extremely important, but finishing the work is at least so important, because else it's very consistent, and that's that we have nothing. So I suggest sending the reports in batches. So if we are going to look for critical dependencies, then we'll see that almost everything will be dependent in some string or the other. So that means that we will still have to wait until the last thing is done. And I think that is quite risky because we are losing participation. So we had a bit of an uptick at the beginning of Workstream 2 of getting new people in, but it is really getting less and less, and that will not increase the quality of the work. So I think we should go with a split approach, because with the individual approvals there might be issues. So we can set a deadline or two deadlines upon when we submit it to the chartering organizations.
Thank you very much for making clear what your preferred option is. That's very useful. Robin is next.
Thank you. Yeah, this was an issue that we discussed in our non-commercial users meeting last month, and I think we're all seem to be coming to a violent agreement, if you will, on this sort of split approach that would have the individual topics sort of be tied up as they're done, and they go out for a public comment individually, and then they can sort of be tied up and we can work on the other issues. And then at the very end, there's a big public comment period on the report as a package, the issue of harmonization and making sure that parts are not in contradiction with each other, and that things haven't changed around too much. So I think that would, doing it sort of the split way approach is sort of the best of both worlds, because we can have the issues neatly tied up early on as soon as possible, and they just sort of can wait. We won't be in a situation of horse trading where we've got some group saying, I'll give you what you want in diversity if you give me what I want in transparency. And so, you know, we would have this sort of horse trading going on if things were left open until the very end. So, but then at the end, we can have this one singular package out for public comment that makes sure everything works together as one harmonized set of recommendations. So it's sort of the best of both worlds. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Robin. David.
Thank you, Matthew. David McCauley for the record. I will be a little bit different. As your notes on the screen show, was supporting a harmonized approach, a single approach, and I still do. Perhaps not as forcefully as I used to. I do think the need for harmonization and consistency is extremely important. Otherwise, we're going to put the board in a very difficult position. And I think that to split into separate reports, I don't think that decision really needs to be made until ICANN 59. In other words, if we plan on going forward with one report now, that may be the best way to proceed. If we find that the operations of the different groups are diverging so much, the decision to split could be made at ICANN 59. I don't think any group is ready to report out finally right now. Nothing's before the board. And so that would be my recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Cheryl, and just so everyone knows, I will close the queue after Cavus. Cheryl.
Thank you, Mathieu. Cheryl Langenau for the record. I'm also now a supporter of a split approach, but unlike David, I don't see the split approach as only as an alternative to a single package at the end. I think being able to tie up our work groups as they're able to be is very important, and I'm very much keen on that happening. But I've been envisaging it very much as, and then as chapters get bound into a book, so do the product of these individual pieces of public commentary and work team product can be bound, in inverted commas, into a single product at the end. However, I do hear from the interventions that have gone before me that there may be a rationale for being able to see those that do not have a high risk of needing harmonisation and great work, and those could be closed out earlier, but I'd still want them bound in the big book at the end, for the want of a better word. Thanks.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thomas?
Thanks, Mathieu. I guess we have to bear in mind we have two processes that need to be managed. One is the process to get our work done with public comment periods, where we also had the question, you know, what do we put out for public comment and how do we deal with the final package? And I guess the way to approach that that makes most sense is to put things out for public comment as we get them ready and then offer the final package for public comment, but only accept comments on inconsistencies so that we don't run the risk of people trying to get a second bite of the apple or disentangle everything in the very last minute, right? So we would have incremental work until the package is done and then only ask for inconsistencies of the whole package with public comments. We could ask the chartering organizations to take a similar approach. So we send the individual items to them for their support as they get ready so they could define their own time plan of approaching this, hoping that all of them will deal with the first things first and improve as much as they can as we move on, and then only have a final approval from them that deals with the inconsistencies. Because I think what we can't afford is that we send them the final package and they want to rediscuss or reopen discussions on an item that at that point we will have closed like a year ago or so. I think we can just propose it. We can't dump it on them. But I guess such approach would give them flexibility to fit their approval process to their own scheduling and reduces the risk of failure at the end.
Thank you, Thomas. Jordan.
Thanks, Mathieu. I think I agree with Thomas. The priority, I think, is to give the SOs and ACs the chance to consider the topics we're dealing with without making them consider all nine at once. We don't want to overload them, and nor do we want to take nine ICANN public meetings to work them through the nine topics. At least I don't. Some of you might. It's up to you. So if we can get, let's say, groups of three topics through a public meeting, or maybe four and one, I don't know, to get the substantive input and feedback, and then at the end, avoiding a negotiation between the various topics or trade-offs through the SOAC approvals, through the kind of overall stamp that Thomas talked about, that makes more sense to me. I don't want to have force nine topics down everyone's sort of consideration at one meeting.
Thank you, Jordan. And now, Carus, I think we have something shipping up here.
Yes, I want to add something. I think in addition that there is a tendency for the incremental or stepwise or two steps. Another cause for one single step would be for some SO and AC, I say some, it may be difficult to examine a bulk of recommendations because of the lack of time that they have. In particular, I'm sorry to my GAC people that we are always deciding in a physical meeting because it sometimes may be difficult to go outside that. So it would be beneficial if we have two steps. That means we have less number of recommendations to discuss and examine at one meeting and then the rest at the other. This is another cause. However, I think that there seems to be some tendency for two steps plus what Thomas has mentioned, that if there is any discrepancies, we mentioned in the last part. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevus. I think this general direction that is being sketched here, which is quite consistent, it's pretty much captured in the chat by Robin, and actually with a nice pink color. So I was that struck me that we need a final package. There is a need for a final package, but the more incremental we can be with the chartering organizations about the intermediate packages, so they can have time to look at it and also provide their feedbacks, the better for the quality of the end result. So I think what we'll do is, as part of our correspondence to the ASOs ACs on the timeline, we will try to highlight this approach to the chartering organizations to make sure their expectations are set and collect, if need be, any concerns or objections that they would have with this approach. Is that agreed? Any objection to that? Okay, so we have an action item to draft the correspondence on the timeline. And thank you very much for a very productive discussion. We've come from two different positions and found some useful compromise here. It's good to see that face-to-face meetings actually produce this. It's food for thought for further, more difficult discussions. And I am now, I'm going to chair the next item as well, but I'm going to call David McAuley to the table for an update on an implementation team. It's not a Workstream 2 subgroup, but it's the Workstream 1 implementation we are talking about here, with the IRP implementation oversight team. Do I get, I think I got the IoT acronym correctly here. So David will be able to provide us some visibility about where we are with the public comment and the next steps, because there's actually a lot of work still ahead of us in the IRP implementation. David.
Thank you, Matthew. There is a lot of work, and we're a bit of a hybrid, Workstream 1, Workstream 2, and then Bylaw Article 4. My name is David McAuley, and I'm the lead of the implementation oversight team for the new independent review process. And next slide, please. Let me just give a background of where the IRP stands and how it's moving forward. Next slide. To put this all in context for us, the new ICANN bylaws that went into effect on October 1st of last year actually established the new standard. That's in effect right now, the new standard by which the IRP will operate. So it's no longer solely really a procedural examination. It now involves substance and enforceable substance. There's reference to the bylaw section for all of you that would like to become conversant with it. It's section 4.3, very involved, very important to this community. Next slide, please. The IRP, on this slide and the next, I'll show you what it can review. On this slide, it's really looking at things to find out or to test whether, as a claimant will argue, whether ICANN staff or board have gone beyond the articles of incorporation or the bylaws. That's really the standard by which they'll be judged. And these five things which I've listed are the subjects into which that examination can take place. First of all, generally claims exceeding the scope of the mission. Secondly, claims regarding action taken in response to input from an SO or AC. Third would be claims resulting from decisions of process-specific expert panels. This is an important addition, as we know from the new GTLD program that was adopted and begun in was begun in 2012. There are legal reviews. There are other kinds of reviews that we have expert panels that look into, where there was some contention and there was no real appeal mechanism. Now there will be an appeal mechanism for these expert panels. It will also cover claims resulting from a response to a DIDP request that a claimant is unsatisfied with. This is new as well. And so a claimant to a DIDP request that's unsatisfied could go to the ombudsman, could go through the reconsideration request process. But if they feel that the violation or the rejection of their request amounts to a violation of articles or bylaws, they also have IRP available to them. And then there'll be claims that the empowered community can bring. Next slide, please. There are going to be two additional grounds that the IRP can look at that are not these next two. If I could have the next slide, please. These next two are not really bound by the standard of whether the action went beyond the bylaws or the articles. The two are that ICANN has not enforced contractual rights with respect to the IANA naming function. And the next one is claims from IANA naming functions customers that they have been, you know, that they have not been treated fairly. Next slide, please. This is nothing more than a statement of the of a provision in the bylaw 4.3 that actually establishes the implementation oversight team that, we're participating in this particular group. And so while we came from Workstream 1, we now have a separate existence. And so we are not quite a subgroup. You know, when there is reference to the 9 subgroups, that doesn't include the IoT. We're the 10th group that's sort of working along in this effort. But we have our own separate established set of or place that we come from, where we germinate from, and this also contemplates us ongoing because we're going to be supporting people that are working in establishing the IRP panel. Next slide, please. This is the important slide. It's really the update as to where we are. So first point, the new bylaws went into effect. The new standard is in effect. There is a new IRP now. Secondly, there's an admin support organization that we need to have. That is a secretariat that supports the IRP. Well, ICANN can re-tender and go out and find one, but there is one in place for the IRP panel that has been existing, and it's the International Center for Dispute Resolution. That's in place. The third point is the rules of procedure. That is in process. One of the people I'm very thankful to is Becky Burr, who is now a member of the ICANN board. Becky led the team. She had the position that I now have through the creation or the draft of the new rules. And then Becky, for some reason, went and stepped onto the ICANN board. And she stepped back from that role of leading the IRP team. Happily for us, she's still a member of the team. And so these rules are in process. The rules are out there, and they have been subject to public comment. Our group, we're a small group of 25. We are now going through those comments and grappling with what they presented to us. And we'll come back with a redraft of the rules that take into account those comments. And they are very interesting, complex comments, rightly so. And that's what we're involved in right now. The next point I have on here is there is a request for expressions of interest that needs to be done. And I'm going to ask Sam Eisner to actually speak to this point, because the bylaws say that ICANN will release this expression of interest. And what we're talking about here is putting out an expression of interest to the public, seeking expressions of interest from those people who would like to serve on the standing panel. So I don't see Sam from – oh, there she is over here. Sam, if you would kindly give us an update as to where that stands right now.
Thanks, David. Again, this is Sam Eisner from ICANN Legal. On the expressions of interest, we're very close to having a draft completed for – and one of the things we will be doing is sharing it with the IoT before we put it out. We think it's important to make sure that the IoT – agrees with the form of what it is and make sure that they're comfortable with the content of it. We've been juggling with trying to present enough information to get a meaningful response and to give a sense of what people are going to be participating in, but not giving too much information that makes the call a bit unruly and might defeat the purpose. But we're very close, and we're hopeful. We were targeting to have it to the IoT prior to Copenhagen, but I think at this point we'll probably have it by, before the end of the week. But it's something that, depending on the amount of time the IoT would like to spend with it, the document, we could see this going up possibly by the end of March or middle of April.
Thanks very much, Sam. The final bullet on this page, on this particular slide, is the select standing panel has to be done. I refer to the IRP, the new IRP process, as having three really important parts. It's sort of like a three-legged stool. These aren't the only parts, but these are the important bits. One is to get a new set of rules. That's in process, as I just mentioned. Two is to have an admin support in place to support the IRP, as a secretariat would and as it has been. That's in place. It may be changed depending on ICANN looking at this process and deciding whether they want to retender. And the third point would be the establishment of the standing panel. Under the new bylaw, there will be a standing panel of members that will be the arbitrators, basically, from which claimants in a case will select three persons to establish a panel to hear any one case. So the standing panel under the bylaws has to have at least seven members, and there is a bylaw dealing with how they'll be selected and that they will be diverse in the sense of geographic region, gender, legal training, things of that nature. And so those are the three things that are in process that need to be done. So when the expression of interest goes out, there will be a whole bunch of, I would assume, a bunch of interest expressed. And that will then cause the sifting of these applications to decide who will be the standing panel. One of the jobs of the implementation oversight team is to assist in this process, but as this slide shows, the expression of interest will go out from ICANN. Then the nominations to the panel will happen by the SOs and ACs. And so all of those in this room who are in SOs or ACs understand that you have a role in this process as well, and that is you will have the job of selecting people to nominate for a standing panel. We have sent letters, the IOT has sent letters to all of the SOs and ACs explaining this fact, and we will be there to support and help in this effort, but it is under the bylaw an SO or AC job to nominate, and then the ICANN board has under the bylaws the job to confirm the panel. And so that's the process going forward. With the new standard and the new established IRP, in my personal opinion, I think it's important that we try and move this process as quickly as possible. It's not a process that easily lends itself to moving quickly. It's fairly complicated, but so my hope is that the SOs and ACs will be looking at this and getting and preparing themselves to deal with these applications when they come in. Next slide, please. Currently, as we're looking at the rules, we have many, many good comments. These are some of the issues that we're dealing with. They're not the only ones, but these are the ones that sort of take up the lion's share of the commentary. Time limitations. These are the time limitations within which a claimant has to make a claim or lose it. That's one issue. Retroactivity of the rules to existing IRPs. Parties is another issue that we're grappling with, and that is, you know, who can be joined as a party, who can join, who can get involved that's not the claimant but has an interest in a case. Discovery, hearings, and consensus policies, how they'll be handled, those are other issues. As I said, this is not an exclusive list. There are other things we're grappling with, but these are where we're putting our time right now. Next slide, please. Whoops. That's it. So my apologies. So I would like to ask for questions, but let me just, before I do that, thank a certain folks. One is I'd like to thank our staff, Bernie and Brenda, Yvette, Karen. The staff has done a wonderful job for us, continues to. Secondly, I want to thank Becky for the lead that she gets. She got this group rolling. She got the rules put together, and so thanks to her. I would like to thank the people that submitted these comments. Many, many thoughtful comments are in there. And the final thanks goes to the team. I want to thank the IOT team for doing its work. But that comes with, I'm going to channel Jordan and Aubrey from this morning, an exhortation to now, you know, for our group to become even more active as we go through the rules. Let's try and move these on and get this thing done. It's complicated. It's going to take a little bit of time. It's in all of our interest to get it done as quickly as we possibly can. But having said that, Matthew, I don't have this in front of me in case there's a queue or...
Thank you very much, David, and I echo your thanks for staff, for the group, but also for all the work you're doing on the making sure this process is moving forward. It's very important because we don't have all the legs of the stool right now, and yeah. this is important because IRP cases can show up at any time. Yeah. It's obviously an ongoing process, and the faster we set this up, the better for ICANN's accountability. So are there any questions for David? I see Niels has a question.
Thank you so much, David, for this terrific work, which is in part the teeth of some of the teeth of the accountability work. So thank you so much for going about this so thoroughly. I had a question about the parties bullet point, and that would it be possible to submit amicus briefs to the IRP, which would or could be considered? Would that be an option?
There's no answer to that yet, but that has been raised as an issue under the parties topic. And parties deals with joinder and statements of interest. And so amicus briefs is very much on the table. That comment, in the comments submitted in the public comments, that is very much a part of it. We're looking at that right now. And it's a very good, there are very good comments to that effect. I can't tell you what the outcome will be, but it looks like, amicus briefs are going to get a very good look. So I can't tell you what the end will be, but thank you for the question. So I can't hear you, Sebastian.
Sebastian is asking whether you can repeat the question.
And while you are talking about, can you be a little bit further down to people who don't understand what?
I'm sorry. Rephrase for someone who doesn't know anything about legalese.
I would be amicus brief. Is Latin for an amicus is a friend of the court. So it is an external voluntary advice to the court on a specific issue. So it would be a voluntary piece of advice that would be submitted to the IRP so that the panel then could choose to consider. And amicus briefs could be requested or unrequested advice from any third party.
That was a very good question, Sebastian. I forget sometimes that this IRP business gets legally dense. And Neil's correctly explained it. A friend of the court brief is basically from a non-party. The parties to an IRP will be ICANN defending a claim and a claimant on the other side making a claim, perhaps two claimants or more. But a friend of the court brief comes from somebody that's not a party, but they do have an interest. And their interest may be academic, but it may be substantive, but they want to proceed by a brief, a friend of the court brief, rather than get involved with the expense of becoming a party, something like that. So that's what we're grappling with, and that's, I couldn't give Niels an answer to the question, but that's what's involved, and thank you for reminding me that this gets a little thick at times.
Thank you very much, David and Sebastian. I think that addressed Sebastian's concerns, so that's very good. And certainly, if you raised the question, Sebastian, I'm sure a number of other participants in the room were facing the same question. I'm not seeing any other question. Do you have a final call to action for our plenary, David?
My final call to action is to the IoT. By the way, I'll be here throughout the meeting until next Friday. So if anybody on the team wants to see me to chat about what might be a good interest, I'm asking people to take the lead in the team to take the lead on some of the issues in the comments. I'd be happy to discuss it. I have my trusty list of issues and comments, and I could try and help people pick things to lead on. But I'll be here and happy to discuss it. Thank you.
Excellent, and we'll be looking forward to hearing from this summary of public comments and the way forward from the IoT group. As well as for the expression of interest announcement, which are very important steps on the way forward. Thank you very much, David.
Thank you.
And now I'm turning to Leon for
again.
The subgroup updates, the other subgroup again. Updates, the other very important subgroup updates.
Thank you very much, Matthew. And we might as well do these quick so we can have some of your time spare. And we have some groups to provide updates. This would be the jurisdiction group, the guidelines on good faith, the ombudsman, and the human rights group. So I would kindly, I will be calling or inviting the rapporteurs of each of the groups to provide us with a very quick update on where you're standing. And the first group I would like to invite is the human rights group. And for that, I would like to invite Niels to provide us with a quick update on where the human rights group is standing. So, Neil, would you like to join us here in the front, or would you prefer to just do it where you're sitting?
I'll stay with the people.
Excellent. Excellent. So thank you very much,
So
Niels.
We're not people?
He's just changing the people of stone.
Good. Thank you, Neil. So if you could please provide us with a quick update.
Excellent. Could you please be so kind to load my slides? Like my very accountable slides. Oh, the pictures went away. Those were some beautiful slides.
Yeah, I wrote to you, Niels. I couldn't get the pictures in there easily.
Okay, that's there is sadness. human rights subgroup, where are we going? Quo Vadis. We are at an interesting point, and that could actually be seen as a bit of a tale of the hare and the tortoise, where we were sprinting ahead as the human rights subgroup, almost seemingly to get done as a simple topic, which no one would have expected before. We were up for a surprise. But then reality caught up with us, luckily in time, to ensure that we really did what was asked for us in Annex 12. So the two documents that I'm talking about were the Framework of Interpretation document that you will all have seen, because we have had two readings of that in the plenary. But upon careful reading in Annex 6 and Annex 12 and finding the discrepancies between that, we came to the understanding that the considerations of that we were asked to provide should be an inherent part of the Framework of Interpretation. So we retracted the Framework of Interpretation and continued working on a considerations document. And we are doing that with a very active and committed group, and also with a very active and committed drafting team, without whom this work could not be done. So I wanted to spell out their names. Many of them are here. It's Tatjana Tropina, Anne Eichmann-Scalise, Jorge Cancio, David McCauley, Greg Shaten, and Matthew Shears, who are really, between the calls, are making the progress and integrating the comments that people make during the weekly calls and helping us get forward. So the Framework of Interpretation document is pretty much done. The considerations document, we have two working sessions of the drafting team planned this week. I have good hopes that we are converging there, and we might even reach drafting team consensus during this meeting. Then we will, of course, take that back to our group on the Tuesday after the meeting to see how the group thinks about that. Then we need to see whether the new considerations document changes something for the Framework of Interpretation document. Then we merge the two, and then we can agree upon that, and then we submit it to the plenary. So the topics of contention where we are now are the mentioning of the UN guiding principles for business and human rights, and how and where and if they are relevant, and in what at what level, and then at which level of the process. So we have come to the conclusion that it might not be best to use them in the interpretation of the core value part, but it might be useful, and that's part of the discussion, to look at it when we're looking at operationalizing the core value. That is where we are right now, and we will probably make use of the language of the guiding principles itself to see that it guides. So it might guide the operationalization. So we will not recommend signing up to the RAGI principles, but see what we could learn from there so that the work that comes after us doesn't go into the blind. We've also concluded that the different SOs and ACs, ICANN, the organization, and the board will probably all have to establish their own procedures to actually live up to the core value. But we also saw that as outside of our mandate to tell them on how to do that. And since all these bodies might also be are quite different of structure with different processes, that they should consider themselves how they do that. So we don't need to do that. So that is currently where we are with the subgroup.
Thank you very much, Niels, for this thorough and quick update. Are there any comments or questions on this update? I see Kabus. Hand this up, Kabus.
Yes. First of all, thanks to Neil for the way he conducts the meeting, very kind and very, I would say, neutral with everything and in a democratic manner and so on and so forth, always kind with people. I am not very comfortable with restarting the work. People, they did not succeed to reject totally any reference to the RAGI principle in the first round and joined the consensus. Now they find an opportunity to come back and put everything in question. We reached some sort of agreement in a very neutral language with respect to the reference to RAGI principle in the first round, Annex 6, and now in Annex 12, we are about totally to reject that, saying that there was no consensus to refer to them at all. Neil tries to put something or to try to have some way, but there's still some people totally rejecting. It is not very comfortable for us. Number one. Number two, even though in the Annex 12 reference was made to the RAG, to the GAC that should have or must or need or whatever respect the human right, this doesn't mean that the other two groups' recommendation should not follow that process. They provide recommendation based on the PDP, and GAC provide advice. If the GAC advice must respect the human right or should respect or so on and so forth, no problem at all. It must be. In fact, one of our colleagues pushed for that, which I also don't appreciate. I don't name him. But the PDP produced by GNSO and CSNO must also, should also, in one way or other, respecting the human rights. And unfortunately, the group reject to mention that, saying that Annex 12 only asks about GAC. Yes, but doesn't mean that we should not mention that, because there are two parts before GAC talking about how this recommendation and PDP are prepared, and we have not referenced to that. So I think I have mentioned several times, and we have to really treat all these groups equally. If human rights should be respected, must be respected by GAC and must be respected by the PDP of the GNSO and CCNSO. Otherwise, we have serious problems. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kavus. Niels, do you want to follow up?
Thank you very much, Leon. Thank you very much, Kavus. I think we should not go in too much detail and start discussing issues from the subgroup here, but I have very good news, Kavus. In the next version of the text, we have addressed the GAC and other parties that come for the board, so that is done. And we're not there until we're done, but I'm very confident that we'll get there all together, and I think that's very worthwhile, and that might then take a bit of contention, but when we get there together, we will have something stronger afterwards for the future.
Thank you very much, Niels. And yes, one thing I would like to highlight, just not to give the impression that we are not addressing the very important point that you are raising, Kavus, is that the rapporteurs are only providing updates at this point, and we wouldn't like to actually go deep into any of the subjects for decision, as this is something that needs to take place in other forum. So I have Steve Del Bianco's hand up.
Thank you, Steve Del Bianco. Niels, when I was reading the most current Google Doc, and it's very challenging to read it, my question is not of a detail, but of a direction. The second block under considerations puts up a direction that maybe if you examined the policies and procedures in place at ICANN, and some of them had a gap between what they say and what the commitment to human rights is, that there is a need to develop new policies to honor that commitment. And that's a very different direction than suggesting that as we do our work at ICANN, we're developing a new policy for opening up GTLDs, for instance. As we do our work, oh, we have these considerations with respect to HR, and those considerations inform the work we're already doing. That's a very different direction than saying that ICANN would have some commitment to undertake work to deliberately address a human rights consideration. Well, how would you say that direction is going to work out?
Thank you very much for putting that point up, because I think there is actually a problem there, as been pointed out by Greg and by Anne, is that there is a mistake in the annex, because there is no commitment to human rights, because the commitment is a term of art in the bylaw, and it is actually a core value that needs to be balanced with the other core values. So I think that your point that it needs to be considered when we do our work is the right implementation, and I think that's also the implementation that's facilitated by the framework of interpretation and the considerations document. But if I'm wrong on that, I'm very happy to turn to the other members of the subgroup to correct me if I'm wrong.
Thank you very much, Niels. So I don't see any other hands up. And I would like to thank again Niels and the Human Rights Subgroup for this update and for all the work that you've done. Thank you very much, Niels. So our next group for update would be the Ombuds Group. I am seeing Sebastian. So Sebastian, could you please sit with us here? Thank you, Sebastian.
Gracias, compañero presidente. Thank you very much. I don't know if I will be an amicus curiae in this discussion about the ombudsman, but I will try to give you a report of what is happening within the subgroup now. We are at the... I don't know, I have to... It's here. Okay. I will follow in my own screen. Next slide, please. That's a participant of the group. And what I want to raise as an issue for all of us, it's that one-third of the participant participates in more than one-third of the meeting, or only one-third. And I really want to thank those eight very active participants, but I really think that when we put in front of you that we have 23 active participants, it's not really the case. And that's a pity, but thankfully we have a core group of very active participants, and that's good. Next slide. It's a slide you already get it with the dashboard, and it's follow what is happening in all the subgroups. And I wanted to give you this one. Just at the end of February, we were looking at who will be the reviewer, and I will give you more information later on. Next slide. We are, as you know, having a lot of interaction with other subgroup. I hope that we get all those information useful, but please let us know and let me know if we need to take more issue or target some specific items from your subgroup within the ICANN Ombuds Office subgroup. Next slide, please. And now we can talk about the external review of the ICANN Ombuds Office. As staff announced us last Monday that Cameron Ralph was selected to do this review. Next slide. It's a consultant firm with a good knowledge of ombuds. I learned a new term for that, ombuds schemes. That's very good to be in the ICANN group, that you learn some new expression. They are based in Australia, and as it's happened, it seems that they already have done some interaction with one of the member of the CCNSO, IUDA, not to name it, and I also discovered that last Monday. Next slide. The two consultants will be Phil Curry and Deborah Russell, and they will be at this meeting. They will arrive tonight, I guess, and they will be for 4 or 5 days. I don't have the element, maybe staff can help me with that, but if you want to be interviewed face-to-face with them, about the ICANN Ombuds office, please feel free to either tell me or tell to, I would say, Bernie for the moment, Bernard Turcotte, to tell that you want to be interviewed, and staff will try to organize that during the next 4 or 5 days if they are here. It's important that they get a wide array of people from different organizations, different point of view, diverse groups, that's to summarize. And we will thank you if you are able to do that and give some feedback on that review. Next slide. That's the current short planning. Our group will work in more details about a global planning now with this review on track. The review is supposed to be very short because at the end of the month we are supposed to have a draft report and middle of next month to have a final report. I hope that it will be feasible, or otherwise we will come back to you and discuss this issue in a broader time frame for the Ombuds subgroup. Next slide, and then okay, you didn't put the last slide. Then I will stop here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. Are there any comments or questions on the update provided by the Ombuds Group? Okay, so seeing no hands and no comments, I would like to thank again Sebastian for... Merci, mon ami. Okay, so our next subgroup to provide input would be, I think, the CEP, is that right? I don't remember the order in the slides. The CEP review. So for that, I would like to invite Ed, or if you feel more comfortable.
This will be shortly, and we'll do it here.
Okay, good.
We need your help. We put out a call about a week ago for folks in the community who have actually been through the CEP to let us know if they'd be willing to talk with us. Because we've had some problems. Channeling my inner Jonathan Zuck, it's been hard getting data because CEP proceedings are closed. They're non-transparent. Nobody knows what goes on inside them except for the people who have been there. So as we were plodding along in our group, we sort of realized, I took a look around. I'd been through one CEP, but nobody else that was active in the group had ever been through one. So we have the blind in some ways leading the blind. So we put out the call last week. We have an email address, cepreview1@gmail.com. We've got a great response. shocked me a little bit. Community members are coming forward to talk about their experiences there. So I'd like everybody in the room, everybody online, if you've been through a CEP, know somebody who's been through a CEP, and you'd be willing during the next week to talk to myself or Anna Loop, another member of the group who has volunteered to talk to folks. We'd like to know your experiences and any suggestions you may have for making the process work better. And so that's where we're at right now. We're still data gathering, and we're trying to get a hold of folks that have been involved in the process. I'd like to thank Sam. We had asked ICANN Legal for a list of folks who have, in corporations basically, who have been involved in the process. It finally came through about a week ago. And I'd like to thank ICANN staff. I'm Karen and Bernie. I'd asked for a book called Structured Negotiation, which I couldn't get in the UK, and here it is, brought to Denmark. So I'd like to thank staff. I'd like to thank ICANN Legal. But most of all, I'd like to thank the members of the community who are now stepping forward. About 2 weeks ago, I was about ready to throw up my hands. Now I think we're going to be able to get this done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ed, for your continued work and commitment. It's been quite challenging to lead this group, and we would like to thank you for that. And, of course, encourage everyone to continue to contribute to this effort. And as Ed has rightly pointed, please provide information on this email that's being published, and any information would be greatly appreciated to feed into this process. Thank you, Ed. So next, I would like to invite Laurie Schulman to provide us with a quick update on the good faith guidelines. Laurie, could you please?
Good afternoon, Laurie Schulman for the record. I will speak more slowly, Cavus. I apologize when we were on the call last week, I think it was, but I'll go slower and more clearly today. Good news is our report has been published, and I think the comments close April 24th or the 27th. Bernie can clear up that date for me. 24th, okay. Just to remind the group, the task was to create a set of guidelines to meet good faith standards for community behavior under the indemnification clause and ICANN's bylaws. That's been done. The philosophy of the group was to keep it simple and flexible, to have it apply to all board seats, whether they are non-com or SOAC, to respect SOAC processes, and to meet the legal standard without creating cause for board removal in keeping in line with the report from Workstream 1. We received an opinion from ICANN Legal, which basically said we should be okay with the guidelines as written. As an addendum to that, I did ask ICANN Legal for backup if there were any opinions, case law, anything that substantiated that we should be okay. And I just received some backup this morning that says really what was looked at were the requirements under the California Code specifically, and that there wasn't any specific case law, but there were some guidelines in the code. As I said, we've been approved. If I could have the next slide, please. Okay, these are just the guidelines to remind people. I won't read them aloud, but they were written with flexibility in mind to apply to any situation, including red pants or green pants or yellow pants. Next slide, please. That's the second part. This is about SOACs having procedures. Again, we don't want to dictate the procedure, but there should be procedures. They should be publicized, transparent, and documented. Next slide, please. There are two standalone recommendations, and this is something the group really hadn't talked about, but I wanted to remind the group that we are recommending that a standard framework be developed and used to raise the issue of board removal to a respective body, whether that's the SOAC or the NOMCOM, when it comes to decisional participants of the empowered community. We were hoping that these framework discussions would be broader. My understanding is there may be broader discussions about we're developing policies, but we certainly need implementation procedures and a framework in order to make some of these policies work. We also recommend that the community consider implementing the guidelines as a community best practice. We believe that they are broad enough that where other questions arise within the community in terms of what would be considered a good faith discussion or issue, that these guidelines would work. An example that we thought about is if the community decided to reject a budget or reject a proposed standard bylaw, should there be a good faith process attached to it? Now, we were tasked with doing our group's work because there is a specific indemnification inside the bylaws that requires that we do this work. That's not required for the other decisions, but it may be a good idea for consistency and for clarity to have a good faith standard apply to any EC discussion. And I think that's done. I don't think there's a next slide. Nope. Any questions?
So are there any questions or comments? Matthew has a question. Matthew?
Sure.
Thank you very much, Rory. Actually, it's more of a thought when listening to the standard on recommendation in connection with the discussion we had this morning with SOAC accountability. This recommendation could either be on the good faith group or on the SOAC accountability set of best practice and recommendations. And I wonder whether we'll have to discuss at some point whether we attach it to one package or another, or maybe to both. But it seems to me that it fits very well with what we've been discussing earlier this morning. And maybe, Steve, you have a thought on this?
Thanks, Matthew. Steve DelBianco. Of the 25 best practices that we reviewed in our draft report this morning, a good many of them are things that could become obsolete over time. A good many of them are highly specific to the activities. Now, some of them are very good general practices, but a lot of them are specific and some could be out of date. So I wouldn't want to put forth those 25 best practices as eternal truths the way that what I've just read from Lori strikes me as sort of eternal truths for how you would conduct yourself if you're going to undertake to remove a director. So it might be different, a different flavor of best practices.
Okay, good. Thank you. So is that an old hand, Matthew, or a new hand?
I'm an old hand.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that, you know, I know we're discussing whether or not we want to put all of the reports together as a package, or whether, you know, we want to look at things one by one. You know, would that speed up or slow down the process? One thing I think it would be smart to do, even if we ultimately decide not to present the whole package, is at least to do some sort of matrix where we at least see where there is crossover. And I think these would definitely stand on that matrix, as, and to Matthew's point, could definitely be attached to other work. So whether it's formalized in a report or whether it's just a working matrix that the plenary decides is necessary, I think it could be useful.
Thank you very much, Lori. I see Caboose hand is up. Caboose? Yes, Caboose.
Yes, I wanted also to add my voice to what was said before. This recommendation status is entirely different from the recommendation of SOAC. This is not to be considered. This is to be more or less taken into account. In fact, it's not as such. So I think it is a higher level of recommendation than those we discussed this morning that to be considered. That means totally optional. If this is not, although it is recommendation, but it is some sort of the... let us say moral obligations. It should be taken into account. So it's not the same category. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caboose. Steve?
Steve DelBianco. Lori, does the group have a reticence against updating Article 20? Or Is that why you want to park it outside the bylaws, or is there even a consideration to say that you would put this recommendation into the ICANN bylaws in the section where we address board removal?
Yeah, to be honest, we haven't talked about whether or not we think it ought to be in the bylaws. My thought is it doesn't have to be. And the reason, if you're talking about the standalone recommendation or the actual guidelines, which you're talking about, these standalones, we haven't had that discussion. If that's a discussion that the plenary would like the group to take up, we certainly could. I mean, I don't think we've considered any of these as bylaws changes as much as maybe procedures to accompany the bylaws. I think it's important. I mean, our bylaws are complex, as you very well know, Steve. So I think to consider is not amending the bylaws, but creating a procedures guide to accompany the bylaws. So when there is a need for interpretation or an understanding about why something is the way it is, we have guidelines for implementation. That's actually a practice that many organizations use. Well, they'll keep their bylaws relatively simple, which in the case of ICANN couldn't necessarily be done, but maybe we keep them contained and to where we suggest a process, procedure, or a guideline for behavior, that becomes sort of a standalone side-by-side manual. That's what I would recommend. I would leave the bylaws alone to the extent that we can.
Thank you, Laurie. Next on the queue, I have Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. Just in response to that, I think it's a bit late for us to keep our bylaws simple. about 200 and something pages too
ago,
late.
Yeah.
But I would strongly support what Laurie said. There's just no need to put this kind of stuff in the bylaws. It needs to be somewhere we can find it. But that's true of a lot of stuff. Thank you.
I think this goes to the issue of framework. You know, if we decide that the framework is actually a procedures guide in order to implement the bylaws, then that would be the framework. And that would support our first recommendation. I mean, maybe in the second round after our comments are in, maybe I'll write this comment. I don't know. Maybe that's the recommendation, that we have a procedures guide versus some other methodology regarding the framework.
Thanks, Laurie. Caboose?
Yes, once again, we're dealing with a very sensitive and important issue, the removal of the board and bylaw. We do not suggest that we modify the bylaw, but should be some sort of reflection or cross-reference to these recommendations. Otherwise, it should not be something that just will be written with so many care, and then later on, nobody implement that. It should have been implemented. So we have to think, there are the ways and means how to reflect that as a cross-reference or as framework of implementation somewhere. So it is very important recommendation, very important issue. There is a need to look at it, what sense we have to give further power or enforcement to this recommendation, but not simply as a recommendation as such. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caboose. Are there any other comments or questions? Alan, I thought it was an old hand. I'm sorry. Alan?
No, it was a new one. Remember, this is here primarily to make sure that if someone thinks they're being indemnified, they are, and they don't end up being sued. That doesn't have to be in the bylaws. It's also there peripherally just to remind people that they should be civil and nice and whatever. And again, that doesn't have to be in the bylaws. So although it's strongly, it has to be somewhere. And I trust we have staff who will put together the right procedure manuals to cover all of the stuff we're talking about, not only this. So I don't have any real worry about that.
Thank you very much, Alan. Okay, so seeing no other hands up, no other comments, I would like to thank Laurie again for the work that you've done. And thank you for this update. So I guess we are missing just one last subgroup for update, and that is the jurisdiction group. And I would like to invite I would like to invite Greg Shatton to
to provide us with an update for that.
Already a hot mic here. Hi, this is Greg Shatton, co-rapporteur, I guess, of the jurisdiction subgroup. I want to give a brief report on the current state of our work. As many of you already know, the jurisdiction group spent quite some time putting together a questionnaire, which was published on February 9th. And the purpose of the questionnaire is to collect factual inputs from the broader internet community, not only our own stakeholder groups and stakeholders, but as broadly as possible. For that reason, we had the questionnaire translated into each of the ICANN languages. Also left a good deal of time for answers to come in so that GAC members could discuss the questionnaire at this meeting and then disseminate information about that back in their respective areas. So the deadline is not until April 17th, but we are welcoming earlier responses and we are reviewing responses as they come in, that is, on a rolling basis. And we have a small group that is initially reviewing the comments and then will present them to the subgroup. So that would be a sub-subgroup that is doing that work. I'd like to encourage all members of the CCWG and anybody listening to this meeting, or anybody still listening to this meeting, to review the questionnaire and to respond to the questionnaire if you have any inputs to make. I also would encourage all members of this group to publicize the questionnaire in their groups, both their ICANN groups and their non-ICANN groups, and on any internet governance-related lists. We would like the questionnaire to be disseminated as broadly as possible so that we get as many responses as we can that are on point. The link is in the slides there on the last bullet point. Having reached the last bullet point, we can go to the next slide. Another aspect of the group's work that is underway is a review of ICANN's litigation. All of ICANN's litigation history with links to the pertinent documents and some of the impertinent documents is posted on ICANN's website, and it can be found there, allegedly. No, it can be found there on the website. In spite of the lack of a document management system, they are there. We have developed a standard chart for group members to use to summarize the cases and to be able to compare along a standard set of data points what different cases say and how they worked out and what they have to say about jurisdiction related issues. So that is being done by a number of volunteers from the group. I have to say that one of the most active volunteers has actually been Mathieu Vial, our tri-chair, really do appreciate the fact that he descended from the dais to do this important work along with us. So if there are other volunteers who would like to join Mathieu and the rest of us doing that, they are more than welcome to join. Of course, those who have already volunteered are also welcome to pick up more cases and summarize them. And we have picked up some new volunteers from within the subgroup already, and I thank them. And their names are all listed on a tracking sheet where we are tracking who is volunteering for what. I really appreciate all of those volunteers, and it's important, again, to have this input so that we can operate from a factual basis as to what the experiences have been with ICANN's jurisdiction as it relates to actual disputes. We have also put together a set of questions for ICANN Legal. Those were transmitted to the tri-chairs and then thus to the legal, or thence to the legal committee. And after that, it was approved by the legal committee, and they've now been submitted to ICANN Legal, which has somebody's volume is on their computer. Computer. Today. I am the luckiest man. In any case, the questionnaire is now in the hands of ICANN Legal. They have acknowledged receipt. They've been asked for a time in which they think they will respond, and I believe we're still awaiting that that time estimate. I know how difficult it can be to estimate the time for legal work to be done, and it usually is an underestimate, although the clients always believe it's an overestimate. But in any case, I digress. So we're looking forward to the answers to those questions, which will provide us with another set of inputs for our work. So that brings us to the end of this slide. And next slide, please. So as noted, we have three ongoing inputs to our work: the questionnaire responses, the litigation review outlines and summaries, and the questions to ICANN Legal. As a result of the need to consider these, we have reduced the emphasis on two documents that we are currently working on so that we can await the responses from these inputs and work them into these documents. The first document has the mellifluous title of The Influence of ICANN's Existing Jurisdictions Relating to Resolution of Disputes, i.e. Governing Law and Venue, on the Actual Operation of Policies and Accountability Mechanisms. And we believe that the responses from ICANN Legal in particular will help improve this document. We're also working on the first hypothetical, which we've amusingly titled Hypothetical Number 1. And in that case, we are waiting, particularly, I think, for responses to the jurisdiction questionnaire. But for each of these two documents, all of the three inputs, I think, will further inform our work. We will, of course, be continuing apace with this important work as we go forward. I believe that's the last slide, and that thus summarizes the work of the jurisdiction subgroup for the moment. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much, Greg. So, okay, so Thomas?
Since nobody wants to ask Greg questions, I have one for you. Do you speak as fast as you did now when you are paid by the hour as a lawyer?
No, I speak much faster when I'm paid by the hour as a lawyer, because I'm a New Yorker, and as a New Yorker, I have to speak as quickly as possible. So I actually slowed down quite a bit for this meeting, but thank you very much for the question. Anybody else have any questions? Thank you. Next.
Thank you, Greg.
I'm so glad we don't have translation services today.
I wholeheartedly concur.
So I see Steve Del Bianco, and next is Neil Stenuber. So, Steve?
Steve Del Bianco. Greg, I'm very sympathetic to the complexity and diversity of views you have on jurisdiction. I've attended only a small fraction of the calls, but I am exhausted after they're over. The question I have is, the first bullet up there talks about the influence on not only operation policies, but operation of accountability mechanisms. And when I went through the bylaws drafting team for GNSO, it occurs to me that the operation of the new accountability mechanisms, particularly the EC, the Empowered Community, are phenomenally complex and very new. They were just bylaws we just approved in October. So at some point, do you anticipate going through all these empowered community powers and deciding the extent to which California, the existing jurisdiction, enables or limits the exercise of those powers, as well as if you changed, how would it undermine the exercise of those powers? Because it's more than just accountability mechanisms that everybody's used to. It's not your grandfather's accountability mechanisms now. These are the new accountability mechanisms that take up many, many pages of the new bylaws. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for volunteering to head up that important work of the subgroup. Knowing that you did not, in fact, do so, I will answer more seriously. Yes, I do anticipate that we will look at that, although not necessarily granularly, but as a concept, we will look at the fact that the current bylaws contain new accountability mechanisms, and that in many cases they were fashioned with California law specifically as a driver and framework for those. We can't avoid considering that issue.
One follow-up. Should we assume that because the lawyers involved in CCWG and all of ICANN Legal and our outside counsel worked on those bylaws drafting, that when they drafted the new powers, they didn't review the old, but when they drafted the new empowered community powers, they did so certifying that California law supports the exercise of those powers. And they said nothing about how escaping California might undermine it.
Thanks, Steve. I would have to look back at the outside counsel opinion, but we did have an opinion on how the new accountability mechanisms worked under California law. I'm not sure that they considered the issue of how they would work under any other legal framework, but one would have to find another framework where there was a sole designator concept, or one would have to change the sole designator concept, which would in turn potentially change the empowered community, and from there the entire framework of accountability. So there is a kind of a knock-on effect, I think, to any consideration. But since our work is very much in progress, I wouldn't presuppose any particular recommendation. But I think that is an important aspect of the review, which I hope that we will get to with all deliberate speed.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Steve. Next on the queue, I have Niels.
Thank you very much, Leon. And Greg, I'd really like to commend you and the group for undertaking this journey. Being a bit of a sprinter myself, I have tremendous respect for people who run marathons, but this seems to be or become an ultra marathon. And when I talk to people who train for ultra marathons, they say that the division of your energy is crucial. And for that, you should say how much energy you spend at which time. But that importantly implies that there is an end to the marathon. Do you foresee an end to this marathon? And if so, where and when would that be? And this is relatively funnily stated, or maybe not, but should this be part of the workstream 2 work, or should we even break it out? Because we see that this might be a continuing discussion that might go on for a certain time, or will we limit the discussion, or will we set a chronological time for it, or a systematical time, or how do you intend to deal with this? Because I'm just getting, it dazzles.
Thank you, Niels. Could you restate that in Latin, please? In any case, or perhaps with the reference to marathon, you could do it in Greek. But in any case, I do see an end. I think that we do have time now as we are awaiting these inputs from ICANN Legal, the questionnaire responses, and the legal history review. To consider our work plan and to put some definition on that. As I remarked from the floor earlier, these are specific questions, and while I wouldn't say we have complete agreement yet on the scope of the jurisdiction subgroup, I don't believe that the work that we have in front of us is so endless or amorphous that it would require being split out. I do think that there are many questions about jurisdiction one way or another that are not within the remit of this subgroup. But getting more clarity around the margins, if you will, I think will help us to define our work. And I think we have, you know, tried to give a full amount of time to consideration of things, even those that may or may not be within the confines of the group's remit, in order for there to be an appropriate development and for people to feel that they have had the full chance to develop their concerns. But I agree that if one views this as the open field for discussions of anything that begins with J, that it could go on forever, and that's neither the remit nor the intent of the group. Thanks.
Thank you, Niels. Thank you, Greg. We're about to hit our time limit for this section. So I have Cavus and then Sam, and I'm closing the queue with Sam. So Cavus, you're next.
Greg, I have raised this question with you several times. Where we are, beginning of the end or end of the beginning? Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. I think we are actually at the pivot point between the end of the beginning and the beginning of the end, which I think puts us in the middle of the middle. However, I do think it is, in fact, a pivot point where we can leave behind the beginning and begin to see the end. And I do hope that we will all do that together, recognizing this is neither the first nor the last time that the words ICANN and jurisdiction will be uttered in the same room or virtual room, but that we do have important work that has been tasked to us.
Can we get that as a quote for the eventually. Co-chair statement?
Thank you.
Can we get that as a quote for the co-chair statement?
Oh, you may use any of my quotes with attribution and a copyright notice and an appropriate license. I'm represented by ASCAP. No. So I will actually grant you full and complete rights as I give my time for free here. I will also give my quotes for free to our chairs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg. And thank you very much, Cavus. So next in the queue, I have Sam Eisner. Sam?
Hi, this is Sam Eisner from ICANN Legal. I just wanted to follow up on the question that Steve asked earlier about the design of the accountability mechanisms through the Workstream 1. They were actually very specifically designed to California law. If you recall back to 2015, I believe it was, when we were going through the process of selecting counsel with the working together with the CCWG, we specifically hired two firms because one of the firms, Adler and Colvin, had specific expertise in California not-for-profits. And so we used their expertise to build California-specific mechanisms, meaning that we knew that they would be legal and work within the statutory code there. So we didn't look at any other jurisdictions as we were doing that because from the outset we were building it as an improvement on ICANN and not a move to take ICANN somewhere else.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you very much, Sam. Thank you very much, Greg. And I see that there are no more questions or comments on this issue, and I'd like to thank again Greg and all the team in the jurisdiction group for their great contributions and the hard work that you've carried out throughout these last months. So thank you very, very much.
You're most welcome. It's been a complete pleasure.
All right, so that concludes this agenda item, and I would like to turn now to my co-chair, Thomas, for the next agenda item. Thomas?
Yes, thanks very much, Leon. And this can actually be brief because this is more or less the wrap-up. And I think we can best enshrine what happened during the day if I give you an outline of what I think can go into a co-chair statement, because that should be more or less a fair representation of what we did today. So I haven't really written the full document yet. I better leave that to experts. But I guess the points that should go into the statement are that we had a good and productive meeting today. We should specify how many attendees we had in the room and remotely. We should mention that the SOAC accountability first reading was successful. And the major takeaway of that document or that piece of work is that SOs and ACs are accountable to their respective communities and that there is a need to be transparent to everyone. And I guess that this was at least something that very, very much resonated with us co-chairs, and we do hope it's the same for you. We gave guidance to the staff accountability group for them to continue their work. And we had a good discussion with Jöran, Steve and George on the roles of the CEO, staff and the community and how to make that collaboration more accountable. We agreed that there will be a pilot for collaboration with the staff accountability sub-team, and the goal is to see whether systemic improvements can be achieved in the course of that work. The CCWG discussed how to best finalize its work, and it will do so by issuing reports by the sub-teams for public comment and approve them as they get ready. And there will be one final public comment period only to ask for comments on inconsistencies between the various individual reports. I guess that's brand new because so far we haven't gone public with a view on how we think we can wrap up our work. The CCWG will reach out to the chartering organizations to recommend the same staggered approach to them for approval. The groups made progress, yet it is certain the group will not finish its work by June this year and extend its work beyond the end of the fiscal year 2017. A discussion on carrying forward resources to the next fiscal year has been initiated, but it is expected that the CCWG will stay within the budget initially proposed. So basically what we're asking for is that we just spread the budget that we are responsible for beyond the end of this fiscal year. And I guess that's an important demarcation because our budget, the budget that we can control, for example, does not control costs for staff. That's somewhat different. And also you might remember, and we've discussed this during one of our last plenary calls, we have arrangements with ICANN. We have agreements on how we can reallocate individual budget positions within our budget. We don't need to ask anybody's approval for that. But what we haven't considered at the outset of this is whether we can take money that we did not spend to the next fiscal year. And what we heard from Jöran today was quite encouraging. You know, there will be a way likely to do that, but I think we should be transparent with the community that we're going to do it that way. So I think that's pretty much my summary. Did we miss any important topics for the co-chair statement? I don't see any hands in the Adobe. Maybe by now everyone is quite exhausted, except for Sebastian.
Yes, I was a little late when the discussion about how we will produce our work, but I would like to link with the presentation of the topic about the complaints offices, and maybe you can add in your summary that an overarching issue, not just to be sure that there are no differences between single document, but we could have overarching issue to take care at the last moment in the final report. Thank you.
Did you get that? I'm coming to you after the meeting. I'm not sure whether I accurately captured it. I need to discuss with the colleagues. Okay, but that's understood. I think one of the takeaways of today's meeting is that we need CCWG beanies and scarves because it's so cold in the air. I'd like to thank all of you for your attention, for being here, for being so active. Our excellent staff, I would like to thank. I'd like to thank the remote participants in particular. We actually had folks that were with us all these hours, and you know how hard that is to follow remotely. And I'd like to thank my fellow superstar co-chairs, Leon and Mathieu. So enjoy a hopefully successful ICANN 58 and see you soon.